Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Loretta from Birmingham, and you're listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything. My question for Howard and Dane is, what is the funniest conspiracy theory that you don't believe in? Mine is that the reason we're all in a lockdown is because the government needs to change the batteries on pigeons. So what's yours? Okay, here comes the show. And remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast with myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dane Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizza.
Hello.
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we are talking everything from...
Everything from Loretta from Birmingham's question, what is the funniest conspiracy theory you don't believe in? Ooh, that's... Dane, that's a challenging one.
It really isn't. I've got loads of conspiracy theories that are funny and I don't necessarily believe them. But the one,
oh yeah, go on, give us your top one.
Oh, my one, it's got to be QAnon. And not all of QAnon. There's some, but maybe some validity to every lie. I may have an element of truth to it. But the idea that Donald Trump has had over 20 years of being a billionaire with no other job, waiting until he became the president to start breaking up child prostitution and child trafficking rings, even though he is photographed and being on Epstein Island. And yeah. I find that the funniest, that people think a man who had his own university where he could have been educating people and lauded money from that university, and then he is now a federal judge, has made it illegal for Donald Trump to even have a... If Donald Trump wanted to start a charity now and call it Let's Feed the Children, it is illegal for him to be a member of a charity because of previous money laundering crimes that he's committed.
And impressive.
You're telling me that guy there... The guy who refuses to pay more than £500 in tax for Americans, that guy is trying to save young children. The guy who wanted to lynch 5 children for a crime they didn't commit, and when they were found completely innocent, to this day, he still won't take it back. That guy, the guy whose own mother doesn't think he should be president, his own niece said he is not fit to lead anybody, is the guy that's going to save the world from paedophiles.
Yeah.
That to me, yeah. Keeping in mind that Ashton Kutcher was on the 70s show as the dumb dude Kelso, and he owns a website where they deliberately use it to distract and capture child groomers online, and that exists. And no one talks about that, but they think Donald Trump is going to save the world from paedophiles. Even though teen is the most searched porn category in the United States of America, they think that Donald Trump is going to save them from child molesters.
Well, Loretta, that is a very definitive answer for your question, and I hope you enjoyed it, because on this show, we ask and answer all the questions, don't we, Dave?
Absolutely. No question is too big, too small, or too stupid for our wonderful audience. And if you like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify, and you'll never miss an episode. Or subscribe to us on Acast, the world's largest podcast network. And also vote for us on the Pod Bible. Now, with that being said, on today's show is a British comedian and podcaster. He is a regular panelist on Mock the Week and has appeared on TV shows such as Hypothetical, 8 out of 10 Cats, and Taskmaster, as well as many more. He is the co-creator and co-host of a hugely beloved podcast, Off Menu, with James Acaster, and his first stand-up special, Blood Sugar, was released as an original special on Amazon Prime. If you don't know, please get to know, and welcome to the show, the edifying Ed Gamble.
What an intro that was. That was the full credit rundown. I loved it.
Ed, honestly, mate, every week I get to write nice things about people that come on the show, and that was as good, you know. It's a joy.
You don't you don't often get to hear them as a British comedian because people feel sort of ashamed of it. So you go on podcasts and they won't list them like that. And they certainly don't do it at gigs like they do in the States. In the States, people will list your full credits, even though they mean absolutely nothing to an American audience. And then you'll walk on to them like losing their minds. They're like, this guy was an 8 out of 10 cats. And they've got no idea what they're excited about, but they're just excited.
Exactly. And yeah. And that's the thing. I feel like, you know, if you're familiar with the idiot phrase, give people their flowers while they still can smell them. So
I'm not actually familiar with that, but I really like it, Dave.
Yeah, it's a term that you should give people their flowers while they can still smell them. And here at Question Everything, we are a florist. Bouquets here and there, bouquets all over the place. If you're a friend of the podcast, we can't wait to give you some flowers. We are.
And no matter how little sleep my child has given me, I will still get the little scissors and cut the little bouquet to give to our guest when they arrive.
Thank you, Howard.
It's a pleasure. It's a genuine pleasure, actually, because you don't. I was thinking about this when I was actually writing it. You don't get to do many good deeds. I mean, there's not a huge amount in it for me. Just to, you know, I don't mean wrong. I like to write the thing and do the show, but it's nice to just be like, hey, you're good, aren't you?
Well, it's very nice. Very nice to hear it. Thank you.
It's important, especially now at a time where, you know, we've come very close to our industry imploding due to factors beyond our control. So we think it's also important, Ed, to remind you how far you've come. Because what we don't want is for artists nowadays to kind of, you know, look at the way the world is now and think, oh, it's all for naught, all those sacrifices that were made and all those gambles I took and all these leaps of faith I made, you know, it was for nothing. No, it's definitely been for something. So we want people to remember, like, you know, you've done amazing things with yourselves. And what's, I guess, 2020 has taught us is that this can all end tomorrow for anybody.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I don't know about you, Dane, but I don't really feel like a comedian anymore.
Exactly.
I'm like
a
sort of general content creator and podcaster. I'm no better than a YouTuber.
This is it. Mm. And maybe this is something we needed to realize as artists, as comedians and stuff, is that, you know, are we better than these people? They maybe were ahead of us in seeing the new landscape in which you realize your expression, and that's how you got in there. And look, I can't work out. I mean, I'm mad. I won't lie to you. I am mad about Ed, but how do I fault a kid that ended up making millions being paid to open presents? Like, that was the dream at the beginning, Ed. Years of business degrees and economics modules and A-levels to work out how can people pay me for doing shit I like. And this kid just opens gifts.
It's a funny time. It's a funny time. And Ed, you saying you're slightly bored right now?
I'm so bored at home. I'm wearing all the clothes that I wouldn't normally wear out of the house. So things that I bought when I was feeling confident and then never wore them out of the house. So I'm literally wearing dungarees right now.
I like him. And I like him. I was thinking. That's a man who knows he's not too big for his britches, wherever he is. Yeah. I like him.
I can actually support you in this claim because I got bought some t-shirts that I'd say are a little bit too tight for me to wear publicly, but I do like them. And look at that. That's David Bowie mixed with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, you've got to rock that. That doesn't look right either. That doesn't look tight at all.
I feel a little, if I have a big lunch, Ed, and then I have a meeting and it's a little bit tight around the old...
But that's all in your head.
You're a father now. That's all in your head. You're a father now, Howard. Like, that's the thing. You want to be the muscle guy at parents' evening and everyone's like, oh my God, Tara found a toy boy. That's not what you want for your family.
No, good point.
You want to be a dilf at parents' evening, people being like, and once we finish going through Dylan's maths, maybe I could suck your dick in a cloakroom. You don't want that, Howard. That's not what you want.
Yeah, there's definitely elements of boredom. Yet when I'm called upon to do anything, it's an absolute nightmare. I act as if I have no time to do it. So I will sit about all day because, you know, I'm trying not to go out. And also, I was saying to Howard before you got on the call, Dane, I've been pinged by the NHS app and it tells me I have to self-isolate for 10 days or whatever.
So as soon as
that happened, I was like, well, what am I going to do? This is dreadful. Even though I'd just been outside just before it happened, I was like, I feel like I'm in prison. And every time anyone asks me to do anything, I panic. But even though I've got fuck all on.
Yeah, I'm very similar. I'm very, very similar in that respect. If I'm asked to do something, then I'll be like, why are you making me do this? And then, you know, I guess... I guess a lot of people are dealing with a state of being where, yeah, not having much control over the freedoms that we never really gave that much thought to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, 2020 is kind of showing us how important those things are. And are you feeling okay since your isolation?
Oh yeah, look, I feel fine. We can't work out who I've been exposed to that has had it, but I feel fine. I'm all right. It's just I'm going to try and self isolate up until Christmas anyway. So it worked out all right. It's just boring.
Yeah, and boredom. The devil's playpen, as they say. Idleness and boredom. I mean, I feel like I have a massive new reverence for anyone who has been incarcerated at any point in time, because, you know, living like this and not being able to go home or have your home comforts in your place of isolation.
Mm.
I mean, it's crazy. Definitely think about how we treat prisoners, I think.
But at least, as obviously my understanding of prison all comes from films and stuff. At least in prison, like they're always looking over their shoulder in case someone shanks them.
So you can't be bored, right? You can't.
Yeah, exactly. You're never bored. Constantly looking out for your life.
I mean, I'm quite happy with my showers in lockdown comparatively to prison showers, just, you know, from what I understand from the movies, as you
put. Well, exactly. I mean, at no point while I'm having a shower do I worry that my fiancé is going to kick down the door and come and assault me. So.
Unless it's Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. But then I know, you know. I'm pretending I don't know, but I know.
Yeah, the thrill's supposed to come from simulated danger. Not actually.
Well, on that note, Dane, it's probably time for a question, as the format of this podcast dictates.
Absolutely. Mr. Ed Gamble, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. As our esteemed guest, we invite you to ask the first question, which we will discuss for 50 minutes and some change. How do we ask another question, which we'll all discuss, and then lather, rinse, repeat. I'll ask the final question to yourself, which we will discuss, and then we'll have a nice window for you to promote all of your great works as a revamped content creator. And then you return to isolation, get very, very well, and we will have a good time in 2021. Sound like a plan?
Great. Sounds good to me. Okay. A question. Now, it's a pretty heavy one. Strap in. If there's an evil warlord who took over the whole world and said, we're only allowed one item of clothing from the traditional items of clothing. Everyone's only allowed one item of clothing, so it's shoes, socks, or pants, or trousers, or shirt, or jumper. You know, clothes. You're only allowed one item of clothing for the rest of your life, and everyone has to wear that. What do you choose?
Great question.
It's a great question.
Love it. Really good. Love it. Very good question. And kind of, it's interesting to kind of start dissecting that, really, isn't it, Dane? And go, what don't I need? What can I get rid of now that I know, you know? So, for example, for me, I can only speak for myself, but Dane, maybe you agree. I'm already throwing underwear away. I don't think I need to be bringing underwear into this conversation.
Sounds like Howard never brought it into the conversation. it's, I don't know if you saw, Ed, the way Howard's arm motion was kind of like,
yeah,
as someone who deals in underwear that often.
Well, what the listener won't know is that Howard actually took off his underwear to demonstrate. We could have imagined that, Howard. We didn't need to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
The elastics. I'll add the elastic snap and the sound effect. I do. I mean, okay, guys, you've been sitting at home more this year. Have you worn less underwear? I can tell you I have. I don't see as much vitalness to sitting at home having underwear under my jeans.
I think I've worn the same amount of underwear. I've probably worn less jeans. Sometimes I'll just, you know, it'll be the middle of the day and I'm just rocking underwear.
Right. Dane?
I like that. I would say my underwear regime has remained the same. Although I will say I made a significant transition from boxers to briefs over the last couple of years.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's a good look. Shocking. It's a really good look. It's comfortable. My main thing, Howard, as well as that I just feel more comfortable with underwear on, is I have a slight fear of my house catching fire. And if you see my physique, if my house sets fire and I'm woken in the middle of the night, I'm not the nicest person to be around if I'm woken up suddenly. Plus the fact,
right,
if I'm woken up suddenly and I'm outside and I'm naked and there's a fire, I have the quintessential demeanor of an arsonist. Once the police arrive, the detectives, insurance arrive, and they're like, what happened here, sir? And I'm like, what the fuck do you think? I'm here, aren't I, outside with my dick out. They're going to be like, yeah, he did it. So I wear briefs. In the effect that it happens, at least I'll be clothed, and that will help my story. It's going to be my test statement. When they're like, Baptiste arrived, slightly smokened face, but he was fuck naked and screaming profanities, not going to look good in court. Whereas if they're like, Baptiste, clothed in a very nice, tight-fitting, complimentary pair of briefs from Calvin Klein, and thus couldn't have possibly been the culprit.
A brief's like just the pant, like little pants.
They're not really little pants. They're more, they fit, like, they're like, you get different types. You can get the pant ones, but you can also get like the trunks. So my ones will probably go up to like my thigh.
Yeah, no, I wear those as well. I've worn those for years. I've never understood the loose fitting boxer where everything's flapping about in there. It's pointless.
Yeah, I used to like them before because then you could wear them like shorts and you didn't have to wear anything over them, or you could wear very loose fitting shorts. But the thing is, because I wear a lot of sweatpants, but when I started wearing more jeans and trousers with boxers, they ride up. And then now I've got constantly have to find, and like a wedgie is hard and awkward enough to kind of adjust. But like having to get round there and re-roll your shorts, your boxer shorts down by your legs, very much harder thing to explain. Like people go, yeah, you got a wedgie. But if they're like, are you basically doing feng shui on your testicles? Then again, you don't want to be doing that outside.
When there's not that many positions to arrange them in, is there?
Well, there's not many. Precisely, Howard, there aren't many to arrange in. So if you're going back to the same place, it just looks like you're pleasuring yourself. And if you're outside of a recently burned down apartment, adjusting your testicles, now you're an arsonist and you're a sex offender.
Well, or an arsonist who just really, really likes fire. Like that's a good reason for doing it. Yeah,
is that a pyrophile?
Yeah, a pyrophile. I guess that it would be a pyrophile.
Nice.
That might be me.
Ed, is there anything that particularly stood out to you as the one? Because the listeners just kind of completely aware that you're wearing dungarees at the moment.
I'm wearing dungarees. I've got my dungas on. I mean, I guess dungarees would be a good shout for me. I mean, it's sort of a more niche item of clothing. I didn't list it in my initial question there, but the dungaree is doing a lot of work in terms of it's doing all the work of a trouser, but it's also doing some great nip coverage work.
Yeah, and are you physically? I don't know enough of your physique, Ed.
It's fine.
Yeah, that's it. But would you happy to be kind of, you know, topless underneath the dungarees and show off that
happy
kind of
to
physique?
Be topless underneath the dungas? It sort of covers up the stomach area, which is fine. Arms, perfectly happy with my arms to be out. So yeah. I think maybe it's possibly dungas for me. I think you're right. You've got to dispense with the underwear straight away because they are. If you're going trousers, it doesn't really matter. However, if you're going, it depends what you're going with, Howard, because if you're going jumper and no underwear, if you're Winnie the Poohing it everywhere, it's kind of not on.
You know what? I've often thought about that. And, you know, like Donald Duck obviously made the decision and just went for the blue shirt with the white trim. And, you know, it worked out for him. But I'm not an animated duck. So I would probably take inspiration from my child that Dane knows exists. And as listeners know, my 7-month-old child. And he spends most of his time in what I realized when I was, you know, changing him out of one the other night is basically a onesie.
Yeah. Really.
It's basically the onesie. It's the sleep suit that he spends all his time in. He's actually got one that looks like Chewbacca. So I might get a full, you know, adult version of my son's Chewbacca outfit.
Like a furry?
Just
dress just live like that. Yeah, sure, fair.
And then gradually work on my Chewbacca impression, which I haven't got at the moment.
Is that something you practice on a baby? I feel like if you're like,
I was turning into Arnold Schwarzenegger there. That wasn't right. That would be a. And then me and him could just. Well, actually, he's got a Spider-Man outfit that he's probably growing into now. So I could just have a Spider-Man outfit, Ed. So something that matches my son's clothing range that's in the onesie territory.
But day to day, do you think you could? Because I want to make a small tweak to the question. You are allowed to, everyone's allowed to pick different items of clothing, but they're only allowed one. So day to day, do you think the Spider-Man outfit would be a good look for, say, meetings?
Well, I think when I go to meetings and, you know, listeners, we don't work together unless any of you, you know, do that I don't know about. But, you know, I'm a creative guy. I'm coming with ideas, often they're funny. Sometimes I work on serious documentaries and the Spider-Man outfit might affect the tone mm-hmm. of the meeting. But I think people could understand that I made that decision for the relationship with my son.
What if you get a meeting with DC Comics? That's surely going to hamper your chances of working with them.
Now, that may mean a nude meeting, I guess. Which they may take as a brave move. They may just go, that's a really brave move. Well done, you know, like kind of, we didn't see that coming. Naked Man is my pitch to DC Comics. But I can't think of actually anything worse personally than having to be naked in front of the main populace of society. I hate that passionately. Mm. So I would rather be a Spider-Man. Dane, where do you stand on this, Dane? What are you picking?
I think I probably, based on observing indigenous tribes in, like, you know, the Amazon or in, like, New Guinea, I'm probably going to go for... I might go for pants, but pants with, like, a particular, like, standout kind of detachable cone for my phallus. So I guess that would be, like, my warning horn or my battle horn.
No one's ever called their own dick a phallus. This is the first time anyone's referred to their my phallus. No one's ever said that.
If it's because, I don't know, in this new totalitarian regime, me being like the dick of revolution, I feel like it's going to attract unwanted attention. Keep it pretty medical, phallus. I feel like, because no one talks like that, they'd be like, he's weird, and then they won't suspect me. But I think I'd go for pants for both thermal reasons. Keep it a nice down there. I think just to get on with my day, no distractions. And also, as I said, I feel like this regime is unjust. And if at any point I need to join the revolution, I don't want to be climbing a barbed wire fence and then have an accident. Everyone's like, ah, damn, poor Dane. Had a cool hat though.
So. Is there not a danger you'll get your phallus cone caught on the barbed wire?
I could, but that's what it's there for.
Yeah. Right, but what if it gets caught and then and then obviously if you get caught up on there and your phallus is caught your phallus your phallicone's caught on there, is that not going to slow you down? Are you then going to get caught by the militia?
Temporarily, but then they'll be like, is that a phallus hanging from that barbed wire fence? And then I'm like, I'm out of here.
Are you still a pyrophile in this scenario, or is that a different scenario? I can't remember if this
is a different scenario, but it's the suspected pyrophilia is why I wear pants to bed.
Yeah.
In case there's a fire. You never know. I just, in these times, Howard, you just have to get up and go. It's like, you know,
I hear you.
The apocalypse. I don't want to be the naked guy. Because it, like, with pants on, like, you know how zombies behave? Like, they break through a wall at mid-level. They start biting at me. I want them to at least get through the wrapper first before they have a big old phallic buffet.
It's nice to think that there's, like, potentially listeners hearing this, going to bed naked as the day they were born, deciding to put underwear on just in case there's a fire tonight because Dane said so. That could be incredible impact you could have had on their lives.
They don't even have to put them on, but in the same way that you have like a bedside lamp, have some bedside pants.
What, you just keep a pair on the bedside table just in case?
Absolutely, just in case. In case the door rings in the morning and Amazon comes along, you're not around ruffling. Now you got to answer the door with your dick swinging. Now you're in trouble with with Amazon. Yeah. They're like, I'm from Amazon, but you're a tribesman. This is disgusting. So have your bedside pants. I'd say, depending on your state, your pants, your glasses should be at the same place on your bedstand.
I think I've got some more questions about the cone, actually. Are you sleeping with the cone? Because surely the cone, I don't know how you sleep, Dan. You must have to sleep on your back if you've got a phallicone. Because if you roll onto your front, you're just going to flip back over like a weeble, aren't you?
That's true. I mean, I guess it depends how you're sleeping, but, you know, I'd probably sleep on my back with a phallicone. Or maybe I'd probably take the phallicone off at night. And use the night cone.
So you got a special night cone.
It would be ridiculous if I did it. I can't walk around all day with my dick in a cone and then wear the same cone to bed. That would sound insane.
Is it a silk cone? Is it a silk cone?
Not made of money, Howard. It's a cotton polyester blend. Well, also, a silk cone would get very hot in the summertime.
Well, for, just for bedtime, I thought. Is you know, it's,
phallic, but a silk phallicone get pretty hot at bedtime. Silk sheets are a lot warmer than people think they are.
Is the phallicone, the day phallicone, mm-hmm. is it like a hard, it's a hard material, right? It sticks out. So would you then, as opposed to a traditional pant, would you be laying your phallus within the cone so it's constantly sticking out at 90 degrees?
Not necessarily 90 degrees. I'd say more, a bit more perpendicular. I'm going for more of a 45-degree thing. So I don't want it to be offensive. I just want it to be authoritative and assertive.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, like I want it to, I want to be able to be like, if I say, excuse me, people still hear it coming from my mouth first, as opposed to like my phallus knocking over people's cups and stuff at like McDonald's and other multinationals that survived this totalitarian coup. But like, no, yeah,
it's important.
Yeah. I don't want to poke people in the back with it. Right.
Yeah.
No. And it's just to be, it might just be worth mentioning to any listeners who obviously, you know, can draw. We are looking to just, you know, showcase some blueprints for this design. So just get in touch. Basically,
it works telescopically as well. So, independent of your like phallic size, you just extend it as we're required.
Right.
But how telescopically does it work? Say there's a moment where, in a situation, you might become, you know, occasionally gentlemen become accidentally aroused. Would that be more obvious as the as you're stood in a public place and the phallicone becomes telescopically larger?
I think when you are fit for your phallicone, they take all these things into account, like the maximum girth and circumference and elevation that a phallus can reach. You know, and then that's created by a 3D printer, and it's their own special phallicone. You know, in the same way, I imagine that women are fitted for their bras. Everyone sits down and shakes their boobies, and then you get the catcher's mitt, and he catches them or she catches them. I'd hope, and then that's how people are fitted for bras. I assume.
Ed, is this where you hoped this question would go?
I think I always knew deep down that it would go this way. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
good.
You know,
it was a lovely question, and we like a hypothetical as we like the show hypothetical, which you guys have both done on the Lovely Dave channel, and I'm gonna return to some kind of potentially nostalgic reality for my question, if that's cool with you guys. You may need a moment to think of what it is, but Ed Gamble, your surname's a word, Ed.
Yes.
Which you probably noticed, and people mm-hmm. have mentioned before.
Okay.
And so, my question is quite simple to you both, which is: are there any gambles in life you wish you had taken? I would say that as comedians, you are constantly, constantly taking gambles and risks. I was wondering if there's anything that you look back on in your life that you think, God, I wish I'd taken that gamble.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I mean, surprisingly for my name, very, very safe, I'd say. I tend to stick to rules. I don't take risks. The idea of actually gambling at a bookies or anything like that fills me with dread. So I don't think there's any situation where I've not taken a risk and I've looked back on it and gone, God, I wish I'd done that, because it would just terrify me. The fallout of the anxiety of actually taking a risk is not worth the rewards of any risk I could have taken.
Do you think your name's influenced that?
No, I don't think so. No. I don't think so. There's not some sort of like reverse nominative determinism going on. I think that's just my nature. I tend to just stick to the rules and just follow things how they come rather than gambling, which is, you know, slightly pathetic. I don't know. What? How do you feel, Dan? Are you a risk taker?
I would say not particularly. In fact, it's funny. The biggest risk, I guess, I'd thought about existentially was taking a gamble of doing comedy. So I kind of like was like, you want to do it, but it's like, I don't know. It's not really the market for it. It's not really, I don't know if I'd even go about it. And I went to university. And so, but it used to actually put like a real psychological block on everything else I did, because like my dad would kind of be like, how come you never played the lottery? And my mum would be, you never buy a scratch card. And you know, and I never really used to gamble either. You know, we go to casinos or anything like that. And I think it was just it was just a block I'd put in my mind where I was like, until you're prepared to take the gamble to do something you actually want to do, like there's no point in doing anything else, because you're always being half-hearted. Because that's the idea of when you do games of chance, is that, you know, you're taking a risk. But I'm like, if you want to take the risk with something that actually matters to you, really matters to you, what's the point in playing the lottery? So yeah, I think it was only after I actually started giving comedy a go that I probably would take a lot more gambles. And so I don't really play games of chance that much. And that's also because I used to work in William Hill.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. So basically, in the same way that people, well, if someone works at McDonald's, you're like, hey, man, you want a burger? And they go, get that shit the fuck out of my face. Like, I think I spent enough time around the game industry within William Hill. It kind of put me off. And I remember the story that did it for me as well was that there was a guy called Sylvester who was a regular at one of the William Hills I used to work with, a really nice guy, had two cats. That's pretty much all I knew about him other than put on my fucking bet, Dane. He used to bet on greyhounds, and he did an accumulator once where he put on £4.50, and in one day he won £4,000. And a return on a £4.50 investment of £4,000is enough to make anybody want to start gambling.
Yeah.
Because I was like, that sounds real good. And my manager turned to me, I was counting his money, and she said, we'll have this back in a year.
Yeah.
And that was that statement was so sobering. I was like, nah.
It's depressing, isn't it? It's so sad. Yeah, yeah. Really, I think that unpleasant put me business.
Yeah, and that kind of put me off it. And also, and just there's other stories, like I'm really bad at maths. And I think understanding of statistics and mathematics at that level is how people are good at gambling. And again, I just don't have the patience. But even then, the one lesson I actually took away from maths was the way of working out the odds of winning the national lottery.
Right.
And for those who don't know, it's basically, if you've ever seen a scientific calculator and there's an X with an exclamation mark next to it, that's like the factor button. So if you type in 49 and press that button, which basically means it's 49 times 48 times 47 times 46 all the way to 1, and then you take that number and you divide it by 6, and those are the odds of winning the lottery. Fuck, and to give you some perspective, Ed, you're more likely to wake up with a vagina than win the lottery. or become a penguin. And for me, again, it's like people do that all the time. And then when you start, and I worked in, so when people do win the lottery, you know, when people say, oh, I'm still going to go to work, it's not just because of them being particularly industrious. It's because of the fact that the amount of time and the amount of your life that you have to invest in playing the lottery to give yourself any instead of being able to win, for you to now win the lottery and remove that part of your life's purpose, you'd have nothing to do.
Yeah.
So of course you have to go to work. And yeah, that was just like, again, that just turned me off of normal gaming and gambling. So yeah, with comedy, I think, yeah, comedy, it was more of an existential gamble I was trying to take. And like yourself, I was definitely a square as a kid. Like, you know, I wouldn't even take a risk with like getting a job. So I'd have no tattoos, and I had my ears pierced, and I didn't, you know, I was dressed a certain way and make sure I spoke a certain way, because I was like, I don't want to leave it to chance that someone might just like me alone for me to get gainful employment. And then I think once I started becoming a lot more disillusioned with all these things, then I was like, well, do you know what? Just take a chance, because who the hell cares and what difference does it make? And so once I started doing comedy, then I was like, take more chances. If I don't pay this parking ticket, what are you going to do? and then I've been able to look and research it and be like, and you know, people don't challenge things. I'm like, but if I challenge it, what are they going to say? And most people don't, especially when they come from institutions of power, they are not used to having their power challenged. And, you know, the first gamble I took was quitting my job, not waiting for another job, not saving enough money to hold me over until comedy becomes lucrative, not going traveling, not working part-time, saying categorically, I fucking quit with no backup job, no alternative, no guarantee of pension or redundancy, just be like, fuck this, I quit. And again, it was like, if you do that, what's the worst that could happen? Take a gamble. And yeah. Again,
gamble. Ed, do you feel that you took a major gamble doing comedy?
I was going to say, I don't think I felt like I was. I think I sort of stumbled into it a bit and just thought, oh, I enjoy doing this. I'll just sort of keep doing it until it feels. I never felt like I made that proper jump of going like, I'm going to quit this job. And now there was sort of a lot of crossover. And then also, I think I was just stupid. I think I was stupid and I didn't realize what life entailed, and always very, you know, very well looked after, privileged. And it was a bit more like, oh, well, it's worth a shot, isn't it? Why not?
Did it help the fact that, tell me if I'm mistaken, but your opening kind of area, opening period of your career, you were part of a double act.
That was part of it. I mean, I did comedy at university in the sketch group, and then I started doing a bit of stand up. And when I was doing stand up, I was also part of a double act. So I've always, and we did a podcast as well. And so I've always done lots of different things. But I've always worked with other people as well. So it sort of feels less scary, I think, when you're collaborating with people as well, because you sort of egg each other on a bit. But I think the main reason it didn't feel like a gamble is that, and it wasn't self-confidence in, I didn't think, oh, well, this will definitely work out because I'm brilliant. I never thought this has to work out because I've got nothing else. It was just, probably be all right, wouldn't it? Just dumb. Just really thick.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you guys talk about it. As Dane knows, I mean, I'm a producer and I'll always be a TV producer. And, you know, I'm very happy as that. I sit and come up with ideas. I try and get people to let me make them. Sometimes I make them myself. Sometimes I find other people to help me make them. Get to work with people like you guys. That's just the best thing ever, right? What a great job. And
you're very lucky. Dane, you're very lucky, Howard.
Very lucky man. But yet Dane knows that for a period of time, for about 2 years or so, I actually dabbled on stage purely just to test out if it worked. And I think the gamble I wish I'd taken is I wish I'd done it earlier, because I think I was probably kind of mid early 30s when I started doing it, and responsibilities were building in my life. And to have been kind of a younger person doing it, I think the fun that there is, well, maybe I'm wrong and it isn't fun, or it depends how seriously you take it, I guess. I was actually I did like four comedy shows with two friends of mine. It was called GCSE Drama. And it was the story of three guys who hadn't ever finished their GCSE drama course, and they decided to start doing it again 20 years later when one of them was let out of prison. We used to perform these horrible GCSE drama sketches. I think then Stephen Merchant actually did something quite similar at some point in one of his shows. I kind of often look back on that and go, I wish we'd just done that more. It was just kind of quite fun.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, that's the same for me, I think, Howard. When I finally bit the bullet and started doing comedy, it was again, well, I'd do it before, because it provided me with so many things, both socially as well as, I guess, artistically and personally, that I was looking for so long. But I would say one thing I wish I took a gamble on a bit more was probably more some activities like sport and martial arts that I was really into. So I laid until I was like 17 before I got into taekwondo and just made my own way and started training there. And I just wish I did that more often. And, you know, we're playing football and stuff, which I enjoyed. And I have no misconceptions about my ability, but at the same time I felt like if I applied myself at the time, maybe I would have seen how far I can go. And sometimes it's because it's interesting to see how far you can push yourself, how much you can achieve if you push yourself. But at the same time, I think that was always an annoying I guess description of me. People say is that he has so much potential, just needs to pull his finger out. And that was always a frustrating thing to hear. And I guess comedy was the last gamble of actually
delivering
and giving the chance to realize my potential. But
were there any other options for you, Ed, when you were moving into comedy?
I honestly never thought about it. I never thought about any other options. Like, I was doing like jobs here and there, but I never thought when I got into them that would be me, or that there were careers that I wanted to work on. I think I always wanted to be an actor and then started doing comedy at uni and sort of fell in love with that. I think I didn't have a game plan, but I was like, well, I'll give comedy a go, and then I guess just work something else out after, like maybe, you know, writing or do something in telly. Or it was just all very wishy-washy. I never, I never have and do not have a game plan.
I think that's the best way to be, man. That's the real gamble. You just let the chips fall where they may.
But maybe I'm the ultimate gambler in a way.
Exactly.
Well, this feels like we've come full circle, really, in the sense that, yeah, I mean, I do look at, I mean, you know, to I don't know. Like I say, I've pissed around and ended up with, I reckon in 2 years, I had 10 minutes that I could do on stage that I would genuinely say wasn't shit. And, you know, proof of that, right, is that the people laughed at the joke. You know, when you do enough of the things, you're like, oh, look, this is like gig whatever, like 104, and they keep laughing at this. So it's clearly something moderate, or like it's working to it. But then to gamble, to actually commit and then be like, right, I'm going to get like, you know, an hour, and then there's going to be another hour, and then, you know, fuck that. No offense to you guys in your life. that is a gamble to be able to pull that together and
but it doesn't feel like that. If you've done an hour and then you're like, I'm going to do another hour, there's normally some things that have happened along the way to suggest that other people also think you can do it.
Yeah.
Like if you're on your fifth hour and, you know, no one said, do you want to come and do this gig, or people are coming to book you for stuff or telling you you're good, you shouldn't. Yeah. You probably shouldn't do it. Don't do the fifth hour. Leave the fifth hour alone, probably.
Yeah, the hint is there from the universe to suggest.
Yeah, that, exactly. Yeah,
not sure people are really in love with this stuff, but it is an interesting thing, gambling. And I must stress that, you know, we're not trying to demean gambling, as in like, it's crazy how much people bet, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I often think, as a fan of sport, I often get, you know, inklings, and fuck me, I can't believe that people put as much money as they do on this stuff. As you said, Dane, watching people kind of come into betting shops and do what they do.
But then I'd say I get it, because the other gamble is, are you going to gamble that you're going to work diligently in an office in the service industry for 50 years of your life and then have a private pension at the end? Well, there's a lot of people that found out in 2008 that that's not going to happen either. So that gamble of trying to rely on people externally to you to look after your life and give over your responsibility to other people, I felt was a much worse gamble than the gamble of doing something I wanted to do with my life. So that for me was a big catalyst in terms of me doing comedy. It was kind of like, before I'd be like, but if you don't do so well, you struggle for money, how would you take care of family? How would you be able to, you know, help your friends out, your parents? But I was like, but then if I go fucking mental from sitting at this desk, I'm also no help to anyone. So, yeah, it's just with all gambling, I think all games of chance, it's about weighing up risk. And for me, it was kind of like, you know, if this doesn't go well, I can always go back to my regular life and do what I was doing before. But just take a chance, because then at least what I won't be doing is looking back being like, what if? And that's the thing with gamblers, is that a lot of the time, if they do win from a safe bet, their first thought is, should have bet more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was a gamble, taking that question, and you know, it hasn't been a disaster. So thanks for answering, guys. And Dane, over to you for the final question of today's show.
Absolutely. Now, I want to frame by saying that this isn't necessarily a question framed directly towards yourself, Ed, in terms of how you answer the question. And it's not about yourself, the individual. It was more about your viewpoint on this in general. So as Howard mentioned previously, that you were a part of a sketch group and there's a double act, which was the first incarnation I saw you, and you appear to be relatively successful. But as you said, you have now transcended that into being a solo act as well as a content creator, and are now in a quasi double act on a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is that with groups, can you always tell if someone's about to go solo? And also, if people go solo, is reunion always a possibility?
Good question. Yeah. I think it's really difficult, isn't it? So thinking specifically about comedy, I think when you go and see sketch groups, quite often, it's really rare that you'll come out of watching a sketch group or watching a double act and not decide in your head who you think the best one is. Do you know what I mean? It's so...
Absolutely.
It's absolutely so hard. Like, you don't want to do that because you just want to watch the group. But I think you naturally go, oh, they've got something above the others.
Yeah.
And at that point, you probably think, oh, they'll probably stick around. They might go solo. They might get a part in something or whatever, which is not a fun thing to think. I think it's quite unfair.
I'd say there's one group, sorry, just to jump in, there's one group that I think maybe had changed that for me, which was Daphne, who I think when I watched those three guys, they had such a different thing going on in each person, George, Jason and Phil. But that's just interjecting on that one.
Yeah, so I suppose, yeah, with Daphne, they're all uniquely talented in their own ways. But I think most of the time you sort of end up going, oh, that person's really good. They've got something. Or thinking that person's not very good. They're letting the side down. And with groups that start in a group, so certainly the double acts I've been in. So I was in a double act with Ian Boldsworth. I do a podcast with James Acaster now. I do a radio show with Matthew Crosby, and I've always worked with other people. Luckily, I think with most of those, we were all solo performers beforehand anyway. Mm-hmm. So those egos all existed separately from the group. Anyway, it's always difficult to work out who's more invested in the group and who's more invested in their solo stuff. So tricky working with other people. Now I'm a bit older and everyone's got their own thing going on. It's a way more relaxed experience, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a challenge though, isn't it? Because also, you know, the fact that it worked for a period of time doesn't necessarily mean that it should work forever.
No, and it doesn't because yeah. You know, lives change and relationships change, and what makes a group good to start with, you know, you don't really know what it is. It's all environmental factors, and if something changes slightly and people's lifestyles change and their priorities change, then it can affect what made that group good in the first place, I think.
Yeah. And those groups normally, do you think the uncoupling or the disbanding of these groups normally begins with something external or internal? Because I guess for myself, before I did this podcast, I was a part of a group podcast myself. Mm-hmm. And that disbanded. And I wouldn't necessarily think I joined that necessarily with the view of, I'm going to do this and go solo with my own podcast. But yeah, I suppose it was kind of an inevitability anyway.
I think it always feels like it comes from an external thing, like someone getting something else or someone starting to do better than the others. But I think really that comes from the internal issues within the group anyway. Because really, on the face of it, if you're in a group with someone and they do something amazing that you don't get to do, you should be happy for them.
Yeah.
Because all it does is lift the group as a whole if they're still interested in being part of it. And also it's your friend, you know, you should be happy for them. But I think those sorts of things can rot away. And I speak as someone who has been the person doing well and also the person seeing someone else do well. I've been both sides of the fence. And it's hard, especially when you're younger and you're ambitious. And
that's the thing, isn't it? When the kind of, not to say that the kind of sediment settles in people's lives a little bit, but you know what I mean? You kind of hit a point where maybe life's more kind of got a constitution to it that you build from, where apart from, you know, kind of when you're younger, you know, it is a change. I remember a sketch group, which I'd be amazed if there's any listeners who remember it, called Oyster Eyes, mm-hmm. Who were four person group, two female performers, two male performers. And it disbanded many, many years ago, but out of it have come, you know, three quite recognizable, you know, comedy faces. And I think they all probably still get along, and maybe at some point you'll see them back on stage together. But that was one where you kind of like, hey, that probably made sense that you guys didn't stick together, because look what you've gone to do on, you know, individually. But then the big one's Clang, right? We Are Clang is the, is one of the ultimate sketch group stories, mm-hmm. which is, you know, they were the most beloved people in Edinburgh for such a period of time. And then obviously Greg Davies has gone on to, he hasn't done too badly, has he?
Yeah, he's done all right. But to be fair, I think with Clang, all of them are still working to quite a high level in comedy. You know, they do a lot of writing as well. So, but yeah, who knows? And I think they all, you know, they still talk. The danger is always it affecting it to such an extent that that you don't end up talking to the person. But you look at a group like Pappies, you know, I do a radio show with Matthew Crosby. They still work together. They might not do live stuff together, but they do podcasts and stuff. And that's a good story.
Do you think that's a good part of the caveat when you assemble a group of like-minded creatives, that everyone's aware that everyone's going to go solo?
Yeah, I think, I mean, ideally you'd sit down and have a meeting before the first proper meeting and go, guys, we're going to form a group, but any of us might fuck off at any moment. So just beware, beware. We're all looking after our own careers as well.
Yeah.
Do you ever fancy going back to a kind of comedy group in that way, Ed? And, you know,
not in the sort of same sense, I think. Like, I liked being in a double act, but it just seemed weird now, especially as I'm sort of slightly more known, and it was such a sort of strong flavoured dynamic, and we were playing sort of characters of ourselves. It might be a difficult thing to sell. But I'd happily work with anyone again. Yeah, just probably not in this. You can never go back in that sense. You can't recapture the magic of what you had before.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? It's also kind of, like you say, people's lives change, right? So, you know, Dane, I feel like I need to do this on behalf of the listeners who some may, you know, may have
before
been.
You start, Howard, I saw this coming. It was great working with you.
Yeah, episode 89 and out. You know, there's a lot of fans of our podcast and the Quote Is Full podcast, which you did. You know, I'd be a fool not to ask you if you guys have ever thought of reuniting, because you had a great following, didn't you?
Good question. I think it's been something that we've discussed, but I think since the disbandment of the group, I think for a few members, you know, fortunately, they've seen some increase in their profile, increase in opportunities. And, you know, a lot of time when people didn't see certain members of the core group not appearing on the podcast and episodes because they may have been filming or working. And the idea of the podcast was for us to unite and put ourselves in a good stead where we'd be, you know, have a higher profile and be better predisposed to some opportunities. So where, in some ways, that's kind of happened. So for, you know, myself and Kay and Ishan, you know, have become a lot more busy. Ishan has gone on to host a show on Asian Network on the BBC. Kay has worked very closely with Asian Network, as well as One Extra, as well as a lot of writing stuff. He recently worked with Charlie Brooker and stuff as well. So a large part of the objectives of coming together as a collective have kind of actually occurring now. So I think, yeah, I'm sure that we could come together again at some point, but I think historic roles where some people may have dealt with like researching and some people have dealt with the more administrative side of it. I don't think everyone can always do that as well because they haven't got the same amount of time. But
that's always the problem, isn't it? The problem, guys?
Yeah, distribution
of work.
It's like Ed said,
distribution of work always gets people wound up.
Lifestyle change as well. Like as Ed said, like, you know, you can get wound up and but your priorities change, your situation changes. Like you'll have, you know, children to support, and so it's not as easy to spend time around the collective and stuff as well. And so, but yeah, I'm definitely always open to it. And like Ed said, it's like if ever I want to create or I want to realize an aesthetic creatively, if, you know, the people I worked with previously had that confidence and I know it works, then I have no qualms about going back to them and working for the greater good. So, you know, I when it comes to groups and kind of the dynamic of groups, I really just hope, yeah, everyone, I would always want to be somebody who would approach collaboration without the ego of being like, well, because I did this much, I have this much of a say. Like I've always will try and make roles very clear in that. So yeah, I'd never say never for Quote Is Full reunion again. It's just trying to get all the bands together at the same time and stuff as well. It's like nowadays, it's like if you book So Solid to perform, you don't know which of the 47 members you're going to get, but So Solid, as long as it's under banner. So same with Quote Is Full. It might be me turning up and it might be me. I might turn up with Ishan. I might turn up with Kay. I might turn up with Ishan and Kay and Lon Lois. So even though he's over in Johannesburg, maybe, you know, anyone can join us. Maybe Ed Gamble can make a special appearance as well. As, you know, the idea of Quote Is Full is that we want to keep the quota full of variety and quality. Yeah. And so that was one of the reasons why it has such an ambivalent title, is that it can always be very open in the same way that, like, an equivalent example would be like, you know, the Gladiators or Shalimar. You can just keep changing members. The name stays the same. But, you know, and it's not like S Club 11. You actually get paid. So,
but it's also that thing, I don't know, Ed, do you, you know, the kind of, well, it is tough to go back, isn't it? But they're like relationships, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, they are. Well, especially if we're talking about comedy, the hardest thing is you form that relationship based on a pre-existing friendship anyway. So, you know, I was in a double act. Everything I've done when I've collaborated with people is because I'm mates with them, is because I get on with them. That's how you create stuff with people, is you have a pre-existing chemistry. And then as soon as that becomes part of your work is then folded into your friendship. And then what happens then when the work goes or you decide to stop doing the work, how do you then maintain the friendship? Because it's been so intertwined with the work side of things. So it's really tricky. Like, it'd be good to find a way of actually just going back to a friend, to a pure friendship, whether before the work happened in the first place. I think that's what would be the good thing to go back to, as opposed to finding more ways of monetizing your friendship.
It's tough, right? That's one of the interesting things to anyone who's not involved in this world, I think, is don't think the grass is always greener. The bits that come out of people being in these worlds often are more complicated and painful than living a life where it's just a mate.
We'd all love to be Michael Jackson. I would all love to be Beyonce, but you never know. You could be Brian Harvey. Now, don't get me wrong. Brian Harvey was ahead of his time. Brian Harvey was talented. But maybe if there were three people behind him saying, Brian, we probably shouldn't have said that about MDMA at this particular point in for the it could have been very different. Because I would have been like, Brian, don't say that, mate. He's drunk. Ignore him. And so sometimes, you know, and also it's lonely at the top. So if you're going to go solo, remember, it's not with that support system there as well. So if you're going to cross the bridges, then it's best not to try and burn them in your wake, I suppose.
Yeah, well said. Well said. It's been a lovely episode, Dane, isn't it? We've had clothing hypothetical scenarios, life gambles, and the politics and relationships of comedy sketch groups. That's a good trio of questions, right?
That's right. The main themes of this show have been, and I'm saying it in this way because Ed looks like the coolest Sesame Street presenter I've ever seen. So today's themes have been friendship, fallacies, and individual pursuits of fame.
Yeah.
With the number 16. Actually, yeah. The number today is 7. The reason why is because at time of recording, Howard, this is the 7th year anniversary of our Facebook friendship.
Oh, wow.
Fuck, congrats, man. Guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. I haven't been on Facebook today. I wouldn't know. So I'll have to have a look at that. That's exciting.
So, you know, it's been good times. And I'm glad that Ed is here to share it with us. With that being said, Ed, thank you for sharing this time with Howard and I. For our fans who want to see you solo, independent of me and Howard, where can they find you?
Oh, if they want to see me solo, not many places. I do have a special on Amazon Prime called Blood Sugar, which I'm very proud of. You can go and watch that if you're an Amazon Prime customer. I do a podcast called Off Menu, which is a food-based podcast with James Acaster. That's wherever you get your podcasts from. I do a podcast of a radio show with Matthew Crosby, a Radio X show. That's live on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Radio X, or there's a podcast of it wherever you get your podcast from. I do a podcast for the Taskmaster TV series where we break down everything that happened on that week's show. So that's coming to an end for Series 10 now, but we might be doing more of those, so keep an eye out for that. I also did a podcast about heavy metal for Spotify, which is more of a documentary series called Lifers, so you can go and get that as well.
That sounds cool.
That's enough for now, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot of good content from comedian / influencer / YouTuber / podcaster Ed Campbell.
Podcaster, I think, is now my main job title.
It's quite nice.
So good. I mean, I like that, because every now and again, you'll be out having a regular podcast party and someone will go, some words, Ed. And you'll be like, let's go back to that 20-minute set I did back in 2013. Everyone will be like, that was good, Ed. I don't know. Natural of mine, they'll be like, there was a time in the old world where ancient griots would recant and people would laugh along. Do you remember that job, Ed? You'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. My other podcast
in Hungary.
Have you seen Dane's Falicone?
Dane Falicone's growing.
Oh, yeah. What's going on there? Typical.
It would be lovely to get a picture of us one day just in our Spider-Man outfit, dungarees and briefs, just you know,
hanging out.
Be a great album cover. Who knows when that will happen given the pandemic. Oh well,
sad end.
Sad end to the show. Sorry, everyone. It's not normally. We'll just do what
Howard,
we normally
kill
do.
Kill the mood, thanks. Howard.
Mate. Tell you what, Ed. Shit. I don't know, mate. Get itchy feet. Do you know what I mean?
Call up Kay Curd.
Yeah. Right, to go solo.
Ed, thanks for coming and ending our podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Great work, Ed. Thank you so much for coming along.
Oh, cheers, guys. That was really fun.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeast. Our guest was Ed Gamble. You can follow Ed on Twitter and Instagram at EdGambleComedy. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheHowardCohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Audio Culture. You can follow Audio Culture on Instagram at WeAreAudioCulture. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at DBQEPodcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.